with Somme, it's sort of you're able to put all of these lenses together and see through multiple lenses simultaneously. So you have the five phase, you have the six chi. Arguably, you've got the eight gua in there as well when you're looking at channels. And so the way that that just sort of tied multiple systems, multiple lenses together, and then gave you a very simple but powerful way to intervene, really fascinating. It made me want to learn more.
I'm Michael Max, and this is Geological, the podcast that curates East Asian medicine and methods through the power of conversation. Over the years, practicing acupuncture has made me less judgmental and more inquisitive, less sarcastic, and more able to tolerate my disagreeableness, sit with it, and be kinder. It's made me more curious about people who are very different from me. It's taught me that when I feel disdain, it's because often enough, I have shortcomings that I've imagined to be virtues or weaknesses that I imagine to be strengths. I'm not naturally empathetic. I don't read emotions with precision. Learning to listen and connect has come from finding myself in the high uncertainty environment of practicing acupuncture. Because while we learn the flowcharts of symptoms, diagnoses, pattern, and treatment, in reality, those maps are simplifications of the way that our medicine unfolds in our clinics. For sure, there is the what we do in clinic, the tools we use, the perspectives that help us to know how to best intervene on behalf of our patients. The tacit agreement of medicine is that we're going to do something that will result in benefit for our patients. But often enough, what to do, that's not so clear. We have to gain some comfort in working with pieces of the puzzle that are missing. Sometimes people know what they need. Sometimes they think they know what they need. And there are times that our patients, they don't know or don't want to say, hoping that our strange medicine will help us divine the actual trouble and then attend to it. Rarely is clinical work a simple arithmetic. We need to get a feel for people, and beyond that, a way to connect without being enmeshed, a way to relate without colluding in their confusion. I've found that empathy is helpful, but not the empathy that so easily can trip into sympathy because we know what the other person feels, but rather the cognitive and emotive intelligence that comes from glimpsing what our patients believe that we don't believe, of what they want that we don't want, or what they're afraid of that we're not afraid of. Clinical empathy is more than being able to feel what they feel. It's being able to understand them from their own point of view and not feeling beholden to changing our beliefs or ideas. It takes a kind of clinical seasoning to allow our patients to be just as they are without an urge to change them. And I found that especially for the people who are very different from me, that putting my opinions to the side for the space of our time together, it makes it easier for me to see how their perspectives might be related to their troubles, and to do so without judging or blaming them for their travails and suffering. Beyond that, I found that when I'm less entangled in my own emotional reactions to their feelings and beliefs, I am not only more clear with my diagnoses, but I have more energy at the end of the day. For sure, our work requires a kind of emotional presence, but the trick, if there is a trick, is to be connected without being entangled, to be understanding without falling into sympathy, and to be able to appreciate how the world looks to them without attempting to talk them out of it. One of the things I love about acupuncture is that regardless of method or school of thought, all acupuncture springs from the same root of yin-yang. Regardless of whether you're attending to the five phases, looking to create dynamic balance through the interconnection of opposites, leaning on the I Ching and the trigrams to help navigate change, in the end, all acupuncture comes back to the principle of attending to the tides and flows of yin and yang. Again, the cool thing about different acupuncture traditions is that they give you different perspectives on the world. And those different perspectives, they open up particular opportunities. They give you different ways to leverage change. And they can give you insight into not just a person's problems, but their resources as well. Over the years, I've found the organ pairings from Sa'am acupuncture to be powerful ways of interacting with the body and with a person's constitution as well. In this conversation with Joshua Park, we look at other aspects of the Sa'am system, especially as it relates to the three circuits of the Zuwu Chinese clock and how the transport points with their resources of six qi, five phase, and channel affinity can be thought of like herbs in a formula. We'll also discuss how Sa'am has some firepower to it, so you need to be attentive to having your diagnosis correct, or you can cause some mischief. We'll get into this and how to correct your mistakes as well. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. These conversations come to you through the generous support of our sponsors and members. All the sponsors here provide helpful products or services that you'll find beneficial in your clinical work. Worried that an EMR is too complex for you? Jane has friendly and knowledgeable support. Meiwei Herbs is celebrating the 55th year of their family business. You're invited to make use of their vast library of resources. Are you concerned about the health of Mother Earth? AccuFast Needles is doing something about that. You can too. And later in the show, Ancestral Sturman offers up a sinew treatment, and the folks at Blue Poppy have something special to share as well. Do be sure to visit the sponsors page on the Geological website to take advantage of all the special offers our terrific sponsors have for listeners of the podcast. I don't know about you, but sometimes I take a step back and marvel at my acupuncture needles. I mean, they're the world's simplest medical tool. A sharpened wire and a handle. That's it. And with this simple tool, hundreds of health conditions can be resolved. I love it. What I didn't love was the amount of packaging waste I generated at the end of the day. But that has now changed too. Ever since I switched to AccuFast Earth-Friendly Needles, I reduced my packaging waste by 90%. Not only are they a great needle, but the folks at AccuFast plant a tree for every two boxes of needles I use in the clinic. By switching to AccuFast Needles, you'll be helping patients, planting trees, and joining a community of practitioners changing the world. Like our simple needle, being a part of the solution, it's simple too. Visit AccuFastNeedles.com/geological to learn how.
Hi folks, I'm Yvonne Lau, president of Meiwei Herbs. Our family business turns 55 this year, and we wouldn't have gotten this far without the love and support of our community. We're truly grateful and promise you that we'll continue to work hard to support you and your practice. Please visit Meiwei.com to find the perfect Pumsar brand formula or formulate your own in our dispensary. Our site also has lots of articles, videos, and herbal recipes for you to explore. And tune into our podcast, Chinese Medicine Matters, for insightful discussions on all things TCM. Learn about treatment strategies and powerful herbal remedies. As we welcome the month of May, our focus is on women's health. Our newsletter articles and podcast episodes this month will highlight different aspects and unique challenges women face. So subscribe or tune in. And if you're a practitioner, get a discount on our women's health formulas this month. Just visit Meiwei.com. This season and every season, trust Meiwei Herbs for your health and wellness needs. And thank you for supporting Real Chinese Medicine.
I love how technology can help to automate my office, and I want to share with you my favorite tool for doing so, Jane. Jane is a clinic management software in EMR with a human touch. Whether you're switching your software or going paperless for the first time, the Jane team knows that the onboarding process can feel a little overwhelming. That's why with Jane, you don't just get software, you get a whole team. Included in every Jane subscription is their award-winning customer support available by phone, email, and chat whenever you need it, even Saturdays. You can also book a free account setup consultation to review your account and ensure you feel confident about going live. If you're interested in making the switch to Jane, head to jane.app/switch to book a one-on-one demo with a member of their support team. And be sure to mention the code CHEOLOGICAL at the time of sign up for a 1 month grace period on your new Jane account. These CHEOLOGICAL conversations come to you through the generous support of our sponsors and members. All the sponsors here provide helpful products or services that you'll find beneficial in your clinical work. Love the healing power of Moxa, but not the smoke? Lhasa OMS has a bit of magic to share with you. I'm a hands-on guy, but I've found that clinic management is actually best done with software, and Jane makes it super easy to get on board. Do you love learning herbs? Golden Flower Chinese Herbs has a fantastic collection of herbal monographs that will expand your knowledge and your skill. And later in the show, listen for some unique opportunities from Ann Cecil Sturman's Classic Medicine Academy and the folks at Blue Poppy share their amazing teishin needles and other Japanese acupuncture supplies. Do be sure to visit the sponsors page on the CHEOLOGICAL website to take advantage of all the special offers our terrific sponsors have for listeners of the podcast. I want to take a moment and tell you about Jane, my favorite clinic management software and EMR. Whether you're just starting to do your research or you've been contemplating switching your software for a while now, the Jane team understands that the process can feel intimidating. That's why their goal is to provide you with all the onboarding resources you need to make the switch as smooth as possible. Jane offers a personalized call to set up your account, free data import, and a variety of online resources to get you up and running quickly. And if you need a helping hand along the way, you'll have access to unlimited phone, email, and chat support included in your Jane subscription. Interested in learning more? Book a one-on-one demo at jane.app/switch. And if you decide to make the switch, remember to use the code CHEOLOGICAL at sign up to receive a 1 month grace period on your new Jane account. In 1989, John Scott and Loretta Monda saw a big problem with the Chinese herbs they had access to, as a significant number of imported herbs were adulterated with undisclosed ingredients. They wanted to provide the safest, most effective Chinese herbal products at a fair price, and that's what started the company. Like you, they care about their patients, and they wanted the best for them. Golden Flower Chinese Herbs has traditional formulas along with novel, modern ones to help you treat your patients and family with effective, potent Chinese herbal medicine in tablet form. Have you seen Golden Flower's excellent monographs? You can find them on their website. Take a deep dive and explore Chinese herbal thought, theory, and practice. Golden Flower is a practitioner-founded and operating company crafting solutions for other practitioners. Visit them online at www.gfcherbs.com and enjoy those monographs. I recently had an amazing experience. Lhasa OMS let me try the revolutionary Premio 10 Moxa device by Sedatelic. For people like me who can't tolerate smoke, it's a game changer in moxotherapy. Crafted with an ergonomic design, the Premio 10 smokelessly generates the heat signature of Moxa. It's not just hot, it's Moxa hot. The patients I've used this with love it. If Moxa smoke is an issue, you'll love this device that supports both stick-like and precise Japanese-style treatments. It's a modern innovation that supports your traditional work. Elevate your practice with the Premio 10. You can get it at lhasaoms.com. And for the next 2 months, get 15% off your entire order using MAX15 at checkout. That's MAX15 at checkout at lhasaoms.com. Offer expires 5/31. Some exclusions apply. Joshua Park, welcome back to CHEOLOGICAL.
Thank you so much for having me back, Michael.
It's been a while since we've talked. Years now. I can't remember the episode number. If I was a better host of the podcast, I'd tell people. Episode number, whatever. I just know that you've been on the podcast.
No, I should do better with this kind of thing.
It's okay. It was before the pandemic, you know, so that makes it seem like it was a century ago, really.
It was a century ago. It's before we started using numbers.
Exactly. Exactly.
Anyway, back then, we were talking about the Tanya Jing, which is kind of a weird, I don't want to say esoteric, but like a lost text in a sense.
Yes, it's definitely esoteric, you know, very controversial as to whether what we have is an authentic ancient text or if it's a later forgery, or, you know, there's a lot of controversy over exactly what that text is and where it fits in with the timeline.
Yeah, that was pre-pandemic. And then during the pandemic, Sabina Vilms, she got very interested in the whole Tanya Jing thing, and she did a whole book on it. So if people are interested in that, Sabina's got it covered. Today, we're here to talk about something else a little bit off the beaten path. I don't know how it is that you keep going off the beaten path. You're like always out in the weeds, Joshua Park.
That's me. That's the story of my life.
Is it?
I think so. Yes. Yes, it is.
Well, that's good because we're here to talk about Siam acupuncture, which it's a little off the beaten path, at least from the point of view of acupuncturist here in the West. You know, we're used to the TCM, we're used to Worsleyan Five Element. You know, we've heard about Taku Wang Jui. I mean, there's a number of traditions, a lot of Japanese acupuncture. But Siam is one of these methods quite well known in Korea, but for some reason hasn't really made its way into the, I'm going to call it the mainstream of acupuncture in the West.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely a fair assessment. I mean, I think that is changing now, especially with the work of Toby Daly, who, of course, has been a guest on this podcast. I think it's starting to become better known in the West, largely due to his efforts. But yes, I would say it's certainly not as well known outside of Korea.
Right. And yet, in Korea, it's quite well known. It's not a fringe thing at all. And I know that you've gotten interested in Siam, you know, through Toby, but also because you've got, you know, you're Korean in background and you've got access to that stream. I'm curious to know what you found, I'm going to say, back in the motherland.
Well, you know, I have not actually been back to the motherland myself, you know, so it's still whatever has made its way to these shores by and large. But, you know, in addition to studying with Toby Daly, I've done some classes with H.B. Kim, who's another teacher of Siam acupuncture. I've engaged with the work of Evan Mahoney, who is another practitioner of Siam. He's a graduate of the now defunct Samra University in Los Angeles, which was a Korean-run acupuncture school that was a major part of the curriculum there. You know, so there's different teachers and streams of Siam acupuncture kind of floating around in the West, but like you said, it's not a very well-known system, although I do think that is changing. I do think, you know, certainly Toby Daly's work, I think, has done the most to sort of advance that in the consciousness of our profession.
He certainly has made it more accessible. I know that I heard about Siam, I first heard about it when I lived in Taiwan. And it was one of these weird things where I heard about it, but I couldn't really find much out about it. It was annoying. It was almost like chasing a shadow.
Yeah, there's not much on it. I remember the first time I encountered it, really. I think it was probably a footnote in some of my Chinese medicine classes. And then certainly when I was studying for boards, it's one of those, you know, you just sort of check it off the list of one of those things you have to memorize. Oh, yes, there's this Korean four needle technique. It follows this five phase logic. Okay, you know, that's pretty easy. There's this algorithm. Great. What do I do with this? Who actually uses this?
Exactly.
You know, at that time, I didn't know anybody who used it. I had one teacher in Chinese medicine school, Dr. Junhee Lee, who I believe did use some acupuncture, but he was known in my school as being more of an herbalist. You know, that was really his passion. He was a Shanghanlun herbalist working in the tradition of Yoshimasu Todo. And so that was kind of what he was known for. That's what people studied under him for. So I did some clinical shifts with him where he only did herbal medicine. So I never got to see him do acupuncture. And so it really was not much on my radar while I was a Chinese medicine student. And then even after, as a practitioner, it just wasn't something that I was really aware of or had much interest in, actually, until we had our Tang Yijing, until we had our Tang Yijing conversation. I remember when I wrote an article about the Tang Yijing, I looked at it as, you know, it's interesting because we often talk about sometimes the herbalization of acupuncture, that was something that sort of occurred with the development of TCM, that, you know, this was an attempt to sort of simplify and systematize the kind of vast and unruly set of lineages that is Chinese medicine. That is
vast and unruly. That's for sure.
Yeah, I feel like that. I feel like that's an accurate description. You know, so in that attempt to do that, many of the physicians that sat down and did that, many of them were more herbalists than they were acupuncturists, and so they wanted to organize acupuncture in the way that we organize herbs. You know, so you think of each acu point as having specific functions or indications in the way that you might think of single herbs having functions or indications. And so this is kind of how TCM approaches acupuncture to this day. But you'll find a number of people, mainly acupuncturists, that are practicing in other styles, whether that's Japanese acupuncture, whether that's Master Dong acupuncture, different systems that sort of resisted that systematization into TCM that will sometimes critique this and say, you know, thinking of points as having these sort of fixed actions, indications, this is an herbalization of acupuncture. Acupuncture functions a little bit differently from herbal medicine in terms of how we think about channels, in terms of how we think about points, and therefore how we think about diagnosis and treatment. And so what struck me as I was looking at the Tang Yijing was I feel like that was actually a little bit of a reversal. So instead of an herbalization of acupuncture, looking at the Tang Yijing, I was like, huh, this is almost a little bit of a, maybe an acupuncturization of herbs in the sense that you are categorizing them according to the five phases very broadly. But then within those five phase categories, you sort of break things down into another layer. So you have, say, the wood class of herbs, and then within the wood class of herbs, you have the wood of wood, the fire of wood, the earth of wood, etc. Well, that looks an awful lot like the channel system, right? Where you have the wood channel, and then you have the wood point, the fire point, the earth point, etc. I would say when we look at the channel system, when we look at acupuncture, we're looking more at sort of the body as a hologram or as a fractal. And so that is not unrelated to the work that we're doing with herbal medicine. I think especially if you are looking at things from, say, a Shang Hun Lun perspective, you know, you're looking at these six channels, the Liu Jing, that's not unrelated to the channel system of the body, but it's a little bit of a, it's a little bit of a different approach.
Yes. Well, look, we have the five phases. We have the six qi. These are fundamental aspects of our medicine. I mean, it's part of the source code of, I'm going to call it Chinese medicine, air quotes, Chinese medicine, came out of China. Regardless of the flavor that we practice, it's part of the core way that we think about things, five phases, six qi. And the thing that really got my attention about Sa'am acupuncture is that it really brought together not just the five phases, but the six qi as well. Like using two eyes to get 3D vision. We can look both through the phases and we can look through the six qi, and there's things that we can see. There's dynamics that we can grasp that we otherwise wouldn't be aware of. You talked about learning the four needle technique as a checklist item for the boards. I did the same thing. I didn't really understand it, except in very fuzzy terms as a way of doing this qi transfer using the five phases. That sounded cool. It sounded potent, but I never could get it to work because I'd always get confused. Like, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. Like, I couldn't orient myself. I didn't have a compass. I didn't know what north was. And it was only after doing some work with Toby, beginning to get a sense of the Sa'am organ pairs. Look, Sa'am pairs the organs very differently than we do in TCM, or just most traditional medicine from China. Very, very different. It pairs the large intestine not with the lung. I mean, you can do that, but with Sa'am, large intestine, spleen, lung, stomach. huh, it's still within, you know, you look at the Chinese clock, it's still within that quartet of the Yang Ming tie-in, but it's paired a bit differently. And as I began to think along the terms of how those work with the five phases and the six qi, and then looking at, okay, we're going to use the four needles here to turn something on and something else off, the whole damn thing just snapped a grid. It's like, oh, I see how that works now. Very, very simple. But the problem with learning four needle protocol without learning some kind of diagnostic method behind it is you've got no idea how to orient yourself.
Exactly. Yes. And, you know, that's the big missing piece is how do you actually apply this in clinic? Where does the rubber hit the road? And then, yes, how do you, that relationship of the channels is something that, you know, I had not encountered until I came across Toby Daly's work. You know, I read that article that he wrote, you know, probably a few years ago now. And, you know, I was absolutely intrigued. I was blown away. You know, I didn't realize that there was this whole sort of Buddhist lineage behind Sam. I had never heard this story, that this was a system that a monk developed while meditating out in the mountains of Korea. And then looking at the way the different channels are put together, that was something that I found really striking. I mean, I think what made it really appeal to me was, as you said, Michael, it's this layering of the five-phase model and the six qi model. You know, I often think of East Asian medicine is giving us basically different series of lenses through which we can look at the human body, different series of lenses through which we can arrive at a diagnosis and treatment. But often those lenses, we have to kind of pick one at a time. You know, are we approaching this from a Shanghan Lun perspective or from a Wenbing perspective? You know, are we looking at this in terms of the eight extraordinary vessels? Or are we looking at this in terms of the 12 regular channels? You know, are we thinking five phase? Are we thinking six qi? With Sam, it's sort of, you're able to put all of these lenses together and see through multiple lenses simultaneously. So you have the five phase, you have the six qi. Arguably, you've got the eight gua in there as well when you're looking at channels. And so the way that just sort of tied multiple systems, multiple lenses together, and then gave you a very simple but powerful way to intervene on the basis of that kind of multiple lenses put together, that to me was something that I thought was just really fascinating. It made me want to learn more. And then as I started, you know, sort of testing it out in clinic, I was just completely blown away by the clinical results. And very quickly, it became the main system of acupuncture that I used.
Yeah, it's done the same thing for me. Really changed how I work. I'm curious to know, Joshua, at this moment in time, how you're thinking about it, how you're using it. What aspects of the Sa'am system have your attention right now? You know, there's the organ pairs. There's the way of looking at like how Tai Yin Yang Ming work together, or Shao Yin and Tai Yang, or Dre Yin and Yang Ming. Wait, did I get that right? No, Shao Yin and Dre Yin.
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly the channel pairing, the organ pairing, that's really, I think, one of the most powerful lenses that Sam gives us in the clinic. You know, to be able to, you know, use the heart channel to treat problems along the bladder channel, for example, or vice versa. You know, that's not something that we think of typically. And I think even in systems of acupuncture, like Master Dong acupuncture, which I have some training and background in, or, you know, the balance method where you're treating things indirectly, the way that Sam pairs the channels and the way that it conceptualizes sort of bringing the qualities of that channel, sort of upregulating them within the body, that's something that I think is really unique. And that continues for me to be the sort of primary lens that I bring to treatments. You know, and I think too, as we start to work with this system in practice, what we find, or at least what I have found as well, is that, you know, sometimes as powerful as a single channel treatment can be, combining different channels together, you get something that is more than the sum of their parts. And it's always interesting to see how that plays out in different patients and in different patients' bodies.
Yeah, for sure. I have found, especially when beginning to learn, that treating just one channel was so helpful because it let me see very clearly, was this treatment helpful? Was my diagnosis right? or was my diagnosis somewhat misguided? Because you could see very quickly if people got better, or if you're wrong, if you're really wrong, you could see that they got worse, like right before your eyes. And I found that if I used more than one channel, or if I added in extra points for this or that, it would just muddy the situation. And if I would just stick with four needles on one side, I would often get tremendous results. But beyond that, the system would then teach me how I'm doing with it. And the other thing that it taught me, and this was mind-blowing, it took me a long time to get away from, well, I'd probably need 8 or 10 or maybe 12 needles. No, 4 needles is plenty. It's actually plenty. And sometimes patients would comment, they'd be like, what, that's all? Right? I put in the 4 needles, one side, and they're like, what, that's all? And I'm like, let's find out.
Yeah, I still get that, especially if they've had acupuncture from other providers. They have, you know, sort of a different experience. You know, they're surprised that I'm not putting, you know, dozens of needles in on their back. You know, and they're like, huh, that's it. But you know, as anybody who's used the system can attest to it, it's very powerful when it's done correctly. And I have to say, it's the first time really that I saw acupuncture potentially give adverse effects. If you had asked me prior to using SOM, you know, can you have adverse effects from acupuncture? I would have probably said, well, not really. I mean, you know, maybe you do too many needles and the person feels a little dizzy or faint after for a few minutes, but you know, that's probably it. Or maybe, you know, you don't get much effect, but you don't really, I would say, have too much in the way of adverse effects. Well, that's definitely not the case with SOM. If you get the wrong treatment, that you will get feedback, often immediate feedback, that is the case.
Hello, everyone. Anne Cecil Sturman here. A working knowledge of the 8 extraordinary channels from the unbroken oral tradition of acupuncture is valuable beyond words. The power of these channels is tremendous if the practitioner has well-integrated diagnostic, theoretical and practical skill. You'll be familiar with Dumai, the governor channel or the sea of yang, the primal reservoir of yang, which ultimately finances all movement and growth. But this channel also governs the ability to self-determine. The psycho-emotional presentation of your patients can be matched to a classical activation of this channel, clearing impedance in the free flow of yang qi to body, mind and spirit. I'd like to share with you the marvelous potency of the Du channel in a full-length live treatment video from the seminar I taught last year in Melbourne, Australia. It's at annececilsturman.com/sinews2024. Click on the Jump to Free Teaching button or see the link on my Instagram page at annececilsturman. Thanks, Michael. Back to you.
But you know, for myself as a clinician, I've come to welcome that because that at least tells me, okay, you were on the wrong track. Now you know what to do. You not only know what to do to reverse that in the moment, but going forward with treatment, you have an idea of what's a fruitful direction to proceed in and what isn't. And so that to me is more useful than a treatment that just doesn't do much of anything. Then, you know, you're kind of left scratching your head wondering, okay, well, that direction didn't pan out. What is a better direction to go in?
Yeah, do we even know if that direction didn't pan out? Like, not much happened.
Right, exactly.
So was I right? Was I wrong? Well, actually, you were just off. How was I off? I don't know how I was off.
Exactly.
One of the things I've found with the SOM, because it's so targeted, and look, a lot of acupuncture, it works on balance, right? The balance method is great for it. And there's wonderful things with the balance method. I think it would be very difficult to take someone in the wrong direction with the balance method because it inherently looks to create some harmony. The SOM method is not looking to create harmony. The SOM method is looking to like bring a water pump to a flooded basement. It's not looking to evaporate the water. It's looking to pump it out. And so because it has some firepower behind it, because it's inherently imbalancing in order to bring a greater balance to the body, you can get those adverse effects if you don't have it right.
Absolutely.
I had a really very notable treatment at one point early on in using it where I had a patient who was very damp. We would call her spleen excess in SOM. But in TCM, the languaging is, oh, she's spleen deficient. right? In a TCM, a spleen-deficient person is very, very damp. But actually in Sa'am, if they're very damp, that means they have an excess of tie-in spleen energy. They're nothing but damp. And so because I was thinking in my mind, oh, she's spleen deficient, I tonified her spleen. And I didn't check my work. So she comes out and goes, am I supposed to be dizzy and nauseous after the treatment? And I was like, oh, here, let me fix that. You really have to be careful in the beginning if you've been using other methods, because the languaging will mess up how you actually treat people.
Absolutely. You know, so that I think goes back to this idea that we have different lenses. And even though Sa'am kind of layers some of those lenses, five phases, six chi, its diagnostic framework is very unique and somewhat non-transferable, you know. So yes, I would agree with that. You know, having that TCM idea of spleen chi deficiency doesn't necessarily translate in the same way into Sa'am. For me, I will never forget the first time I caused an adverse reaction. This was a patient who was a long-haul COVID patient. She was experiencing palpitations, insomnia, shortness of breath, and kind of a weird vibrating sensation throughout her body. You know, so I remember looking at that and thinking, okay, this is probably a case of what we would call gallbladder access within Sa'am acupuncture. You know, she's got shortness of breath, trouble sleeping. This is too much upward and outward movement. It seems like that's sort of the movement that we associate with the gallbladder channel in Sa'am acupuncture. So we're going to tonify the pericardium channel, and this should, you know, calm everything down. So I remember I put in the needles, left her for, you know, a few minutes. When I came back, she said, I'm having the vibrating sensation right now. Typically, I only have this late at night, and it is really intense. You know, and it was interesting because part of me started panicking because I was like, oh no, you know, what is this? But the other part of me was like, you know what? You, in theory, you know what to do, right? So I remained calm and I said, you know what? That's okay. I think I know how to fix this. I took out, you know, the four needles, did a gallbladder channel tonification treatment, opposite side. The shaking immediately subsided. And then she was able to sleep really comfortably that night. And she responded very well to additional treatments with gallbladder tonification.
Hi, everyone. Anne Cecil Sturman here. I'd like to let you know about the Classical Medicine Academy, a place where students and seasoned practitioners gather to deepen their working knowledge of the complete classical acupuncture and dietary systems. CMA is subscription-based and live online, providing 20 hours per month of question and answer sessions in acupuncture, channel practice, dietary medicine, cultivation, and Qigong classes, plus self-paced courses in many subjects, including pulse diagnosis, plus hundreds of hours of archived classes in dietary medicine taught by my husband, Andrew Sturman, plus hundreds of hours of archived classes taught by me, Cody Dodo, and Daniel Post. Join our heart-centered community and bring questions and cases for discussion. You'll be invited to join our private Facebook community group where over 750 people network to discuss cases and theory with classical practitioners on five continents. Welcome to the Classical Medicine Academy tab on my website, AnneCecilSturman.com. See you there.
Sometimes it's so counterintuitive. You think you're seeing it correctly, and then you find out from the patient, like, nope, that's not right. Oh, now I get to update my model of the world.
Yes, and what I noticed, I've treated a number of long-haul COVID patients with Sa'am acupuncture since then. What I have noticed is that not all of them, but many of them respond better to gallbladder tonification or Sanjiao tonification than they do to pericardium tonification, even though some of their symptoms, they often have neurological symptoms, they often have insomnia. They have symptoms that maybe on the surface we would think more. This person might respond better to a pericardium channel tonification treatment. What's actually going on, I think, is that there's still some kind of lingering pathogen. And so the force of the gallbladder is actually going to lift that up and out. And that is going to help the body to stabilize. That's one way that I understand that treatment working.
Yeah. So the gallbladder is trying to make something happen.
Yes.
It actually doesn't have enough force to, and it appears like there's a gallbladder excess, but it's actually that it's not in gear.
Exactly.
It doesn't have enough gas behind it.
Doesn't have enough gas behind it. And I think also the effects of, that particular virus that can cause a lot of stasis in the body, that can cause blood stasis, that can cause phlegm. And so the strong force of the gallbladder is able to, by mobilizing ministerial fire, kind of break through that. And that helps to alleviate some of the symptoms. You know, you can't stick with that forever. And I would say that's the other challenge with SOM acupuncture is I feel like it's very good at creating breakthroughs for patients. But it's very easy for us to get kind of complacent and say, oh, okay, they respond well to this channel. I'll just keep doing this channel. But if you treat a patient for any length of time, what you find out very quickly is, you know, this channel can be great for creating breakthroughs. And maybe, you know, constitutionally, they will tend to respond well to this treatment. But if you're going to treat them, you know, more than just a few times, you're going to have to change it up and figuring out how to, if you're using mainly SOM acupuncture, incorporate different channel treatments over a long course of time. That's something I would say that I think anyone working with SOM acupuncture is going to have to get good at doing. How do you incorporate, different channels? What I've found that works best for most people is finding at least one or two channels from each of the circuits of four. So, you know, one or two channels from the Tai Yin Yang Ming circuit, one or two channels from the Xiao Yin Tai Yang circuit, one or two channels from the Jue Yin Xiao Yang circuit. And then just kind of rotating based on how they're presenting at that moment. That tends to work very well for me most of the time when you're treating somebody over a longer period of time.
Mm. That's a helpful way to think about it. In part because, okay, now you're getting all the circuits involved. We need that. You know, it's just thinking, you were talking about breakthrough treatments. This is where training as an herbalist is really helpful. Because as an herbalist, you're not thinking, oh, I've got this formula that they're going to be on this forever. No, you're going to give a formula. You expect to see a difference. You might continue it, but you're probably going to change it up once you start to get something to change.
Exactly. And, you know,
right. You go from like clearing something out to harmonizing to then maybe a little tonification at the end. There's a beginning, middle, and end. And I think that kind of thinking is helpful to bring in when you're using SOM because, again, it has that potency to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, it's interesting how in some ways, you know, earlier we were talking about the sort of herbalization of acupuncture. And it's interesting to me how working with SOM, thinking about this relationship between acupuncture and herbal medicine, because there's definitely some differences in method, but there's also some deep convergences, you know, and of course they're all, both methods are coming out of the same framework of looking at the human body, looking at the cosmos that is East Asian medicine. So of course they're going to have some deeper resonance. A framework that I find helpful that I think you can apply to both is this concept of Li Fa Fang Yao in herbalism or Li Fa Fang Shui in acupuncture, you know, principle, method, formula, and then at the individual level, either individual herbs for herbalism or for individual points for acupuncture, you know, and so it's interesting to think of the treatments in SOM acupuncture as formulas that could potentially be modified at the level of individual points, but also thinking of them perhaps as treatment principles as well, you know, so that when you do spleen tonification, you're bringing in the quality of Tai Yin, you're bringing in that intense moisture, that intense dampness. Maybe we could say some warm moisture, since there's a little bit of warmth in that treatment into the body. And so that's both a set formula, but that's also a treatment principle.
Yeah, just like herbs. It's so fascinating to me. You use the term acupuncturization of herbal medicine. And I think SOM lends itself to that. I know that it has helped me with my herbal medicine diagnoses. It's really helped me to clarify things. So let me give you an example. You were just talking about bringing in the energy of the Tai Yin spleen. Now the Tai Yin spleen, right? So it's Tai Yin. So it's really, you know, it's as wet as you're going to get. And it's spleen, so it's a little bit warm. You can bring in some warm fluid by tonifying the spleen. Maybe you need to bring in some fluid, but it needs to be cooler. All right, now you can think about the lung. Tie in metal. Metal's on the cool side. It's a little bit drying, not as wet as spleen. Right? So it's more like a, maybe like a mist or, you know, a drizzle, a cool drizzle versus a, you know, hot torrent of, you know, some kind of typhoon coming through, right? There's that idea. And it's very easy to bring that thinking from herbal medicine into acupuncture. We have herbs, they're moistening and cooling, or they're moistening and warming. Likewise, we could have hot and drying or cool and drying. And we've got that framework in our herbal medicine thinking. We can apply that to the channels with Sa'am, because we're looking at the character and nature both of the five phase and the six chi. We're considering them together. It's not just one thing. It's two things that are constantly dynamically in interaction with each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's beautifully stated.
Now, one of the things that I've come across recently, and I think you've mentioned it as well. I saw it on there. You know, there's a Facebook forum these days for Sa'am acupuncture. And there's this idea of the, I can say it in Chinese. How do you say it in Korean? I think it's called Sambo, right? Where you've got like, you've got the channels. For example, we're just talking spleen. So let's stick with spleen. Spleen is about as wet as you're going to get, right? It's tie-in and it's earth. And it's paired with the large intestine, which is yangming, that's dry, and it's metal, so that's dry. The large intestine is the driest channel in the body. Spleen is the wettest channel in the body. So those are strong, right? That's a very clear message. But then as you get into it, you've got, say, the, you know, and again, you can look at the Chinese clock to see this very, very clearly. You've got your metal tie-in lung. Oh, that's a mix of dry and wet. And then you've got your stomach. Again, it's earth and it's yangming. So it's a mix of dry and wet. And then as you pointed out earlier, you've got all the transport points that also have their own characteristic based on their nature. Is it a fire point? Is it a metal point? And so it seems to me we have a vocabulary here, not unlike an herbal vocabulary, for putting together a prescription of hot and cold or drying or out thrusting, like you were talking about with the gallbladder. So I'd like to get your take on thinking about the various principles of Sa'am in relation to these points. And let's start with, I mean, what the basic principles are. I think many of our listeners may not have a sense of Sa'am. What are the basic principles according to the different meridians? I mean, I'd love to go around the clock and get a sense of this, because I think that's the ABCs of the system.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so I would say the beauty of Sa'am is it brings together, I think, all of the foundational theories really of East Asian medicine. And so I think the easiest way to look at the channels, right, is you have this division into three based on circuits, right? So you have the tie-in and the yangming. That's the large intestine, the stomach, the spleen, and the lung. Those obviously interrelate in different ways, right? The lung and the large intestine, they're interior-exterior pairs. The spleen is the foot tie-in channel. The lung is the hand tie-in channel. Large intestine and stomach are hand and foot yangming. And so it's the same with the other channels, right? You have a Xiaoyin Taiyang circuit, and then you have a Zhuiyin Xiaoyang circuit. And so one way of looking at this division into three, this is often likened to the division of heaven, earth, and humanity. So you have the earth circuit, which is the Taiyin and Yangming. You have the heaven circuit, which is the Xiaoyin and Taiyang. And then you have the human circuit, which is the Zhuiyin and Xiaoyang. I first learned about this division when I was studying herbalism and Chinese cosmology with Heiner Freuhoff. This is used in many different systems, but it's a helpful way of looking at things in terms of Sa'am acupuncture. And so another way of looking at each of these three circuits of channels is that each one, you could say, kind of governs a fundamental aspect of qi, right? So with Taiyin Yangming, the first circuit, the earth circuit, we're really looking at moisture there. You're looking at the relationship between dampness and dryness. With the heaven circuit, where you're looking at Xiaoyin and Taiyang, you're really looking at the relationship of temperature there. You're looking at heat and cold. And then lastly, with the human circuit of channels, where you're looking at Zhuiyin and Xiaoyang, what you're looking at there is the relationship of movement, right? Inward movement or outward movement. And so you could say these are all yin-yang pairs, right? This is all, in a way, right? All of East Asian medicine is just an elaboration on yin and yang. And so this is just another way of really dividing phenomenal experience into yin and yang qualities that we associate with a particular channel. So Tai Yin governs moisture, Yang Ming governs dryness. Xiaoyin governs heat, Taiyang governs cold. Zhuiyin governs inward movement, Xiaoyang governs outward movement. You know, and hopefully those divisions are going to be somewhat familiar to you if you're a student or practitioner of East Asian medicine.
It's the ABCs.
Right, exactly.
It's actually the ABCs. And it here's the thing that got me when I first started studying this. It's so simple.
Yes.
This aspect is so simple. Like, is it hot or is it cold? Is it dry? Is it wet? Is it in? Is it out? Is it excess or is it deficient? In some ways, it's so simple, I overlook it.
Yes. I mean, so there's a great quote that I learned from Jason Blaylock, who talked about, you know, he's in the tradition of Qinbo Wei.
He's a great herbalist.
He's a fantastic, fantastic herbalist. I think this is in his book, The 56 Methods of Qinbo Wei. Qinbo Wei was, fabulous book. He was
Thank you, Eastland Press.
Yeah, he was a major major contributor to the development of TCM in the 1950s. He was a part of the Menghe Ding lineage of herbalists, and so he had a phrase that he loved when it came to studying and understanding Chinese medicine, where he said, "From the complex, return to the simple." From the complex, return to the simple. And I think that is, you know, Sam is a perfect example of that, in the sense that it is able to enfold all of this, all of the complex theories of East Asian medicine within it, and yet you return it to something very simple, like moisture, temperature, we could say pressure for the movement aspect. Really, you know, these are all the different transformations of qi, you know, and so just keeping that in mind, that all of the complex theories that we learn, it all just comes back to yin and yang. It all just comes back to expansion and contraction in various domains. And so what you're doing with Sam acupuncture is you're upregulating one of those domains. You're either, you know, increasing moisture or you're increasing dryness. You're increasing heat or you're increasing cold. You're increasing inward movement, you're increasing outward movement. There's different ways you can do that working with the channels. And so understanding that that's sort of the landscape of the channels, you have what are called, sometimes it's called tonification treatment or sedation treatment. So you can either upregulate the activity of a channel or you can downregulate the activity of a channel. But because the channels are paired, whenever you upregulate the activity of one channel, you're downregulating the activity of its corresponding channel pair.
I mean, it's so yin and yang.
It is so yin and yang.
I mean, you can't increase yang without having a commensurate decrease in yin. And I think for a large part of my acupuncture career, I didn't consider that things were paired. I thought they were kind of individual actors, so to speak. And I'd forget that they were connected to the other side.
Yeah, it's a very ecological way of looking at the channel system, you know. And so in, you know, I'm sure you've read Toby Daly's new book, kind of encapsulating his transmission of Sam acupuncture. And to me, one of the things I enjoyed the most about that book was he goes back to Lingshu chapter 12, talks about how the 12 channels relate to 12 different waterways in the natural world. And so in his book, Toby sort of takes that concept and says, okay, let's look at 12 ecosystems globally that we could say correspond to the different qualities in the different channel systems. I love that because, first of all, it makes it more concrete when you're thinking about how to work with the channel system. But
in recent years, the Sam acupuncture style has generated significant interest and a loyal and growing following. In the Sam approach, a precise diagnosis leads to a four-needle treatment to address the five element and six qi imbalances in the body. The four needles target the controlling and generating cycles. It's common using this method for the needle sensation to be stronger than in many other styles. Thus, the choice of needle becomes important. The Unico brand of needles lends itself to both strong and gentle techniques. These superior needles are made of uncoated Japanese surgical stainless steel and feature the best guide tube on the market with its unique beveled edge. Additionally, Unico needles have a tensile property that helps with freehanding needles into Jingwell points and allows you to more easily feel the arrival of qi. Blue Poppy is the exclusive importer and distributor of Unico needles. Use the code QI2024 to save 10% off Unico needles at www.bluepoppy.com. You'll be glad you did.
It also, I think, really emphasizes the ecological aspect. You know, I often think of East Asian medicine, whether we're working with acupuncture, whether we're working with herbs, it's really doing a kind of permaculture at the microcosmic level of the body. You know, or we could say that the macrocosm, permaculture is a kind of acupuncture or herbal medicine for an ecosystem. And so, of course, you can't pull, because the ecological perspective, whether you're talking about the body, whether you're talking about a larger community, you can't pull on one thing without pulling on everything else. You know, you pull on one strand, you're going to pull the whole sweater, so to speak. And so it's the same with the channel system. You know, you increase one quality, you're decreasing another. And so then, of course, it's just about finding what quality does this person in front of me need more of in order to overcome whatever challenge they happen to be facing, whether that's a physical challenge, whether that is a emotional challenge. I would say that's the other thing that SOM acupuncture does very well, is that it addresses really the sort of psycho-emotional level of complaints in a way that is very direct and very powerful.
Tell me more about that.
Yeah. So in addition to looking at the channel system in terms of these different qualities, moisture and dryness, hot and cold, inward and outward movement, each of the channels has a sort of corresponding psycho-emotional quality associated with it. So this was, I would say, spelled out maybe most clearly by the East Asian medicine practitioner Kim Hong Kyung. He was a doctor of Korean medicine who is really, I would say, responsible for popularizing SOM acupuncture in Korea. It was really his work that brought SOM acupuncture kind of into the mainstream, making it one of the most popular forms of acupuncture practiced in Korea today. And something that he spelled out very clearly in his work was this idea of how SOM acupuncture can address things at the psycho-emotional level. And so in his teachings, Kim Hong Kyung talks about how the yin channels, we could say, govern satisfaction, the yang channels govern dissatisfaction. But in the same way that each of the channel circuits governs a different domain in terms of qualities like moisture, temperature, pressure, or movement, each of the channel circuits governs a different quality of the psyche. So the earth circuit of Tai Yin Yang Ming governs satisfaction and dissatisfaction related to what we would call maybe the physical realm. So our satisfaction or dissatisfaction with things like money, food, shelter, clothing, sort of the bottom of the pyramid of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, if you're familiar with that. And then the Shaoyin.
The foundation.
Yes.
It's actually the foundation.
The foundation. And that makes sense, right? This is the earth. These are the organs responsible for our postnatal metabolism, for processing food. So it makes sense that they're related to our sort of psychological wellness insofar as that is connected to our physical wellness and meeting our physical needs.
Okay. So if we got some guy who maybe barely graduated college and he's living in his parents' basement, he's playing computer games because he just can't get his damn act together in life, and he's being fed by his family because he can't do it himself, that dude doesn't have enough drive and satisfaction. Maybe tonify his stomach or his large intestine to give him a little bit of, I'm going to say, dissatisfaction that moves them forward into life?
Yes,
does that kind of thinking hold up in your mind?
That thinking absolutely holds up. You know, and so it's interesting because, you know, I think as Western people, when we encounter the concept of yin and yang, we think of it, oh, this is a duality. That means one of them is good, one of them is bad. And so we want one, we want to stay away from the other. But really, yin-yang thinking is all about context, right? Mm. Nothing is inherently good or bad. It's all contextual. It's all in relation to something else, to some situation. And so it's the same thing with satisfaction and dissatisfaction. the kind of person you're describing, we could say they don't have enough dissatisfaction, perhaps, which means maybe they don't have enough drive to go out. They don't have a hunger to go out and express themselves in a particular way or to acquire things in a particular way. And so they could do with a little bit more of that. Somebody else might have the opposite problem. Maybe they're too hungry for more. Maybe they're too greedy, or they are just, you know, they're never satisfied. They're never satisfied. And, you know, it's interesting how that could be both a strength and a weakness. It's all about sort of certainly amount, right? This idea that we get in the West from Paracelsus, that it's the dosage that makes the poison. That's, I would say, an example of yin-yang thinking, which is to say it's all about context. It's not that this thing has some inherent properties that make it always good or always bad for all people. No, it's all about understanding, when is this a good thing? When is this a bad thing? And what kind of person is this a good thing for? I would say those are the questions that Sam acupuncture asks. And I would say this is something that you see in other forms of Korean medicine as well. There's a lot of emphasis on constitution, a lot of emphasis on looking at what kind of person is this herb or this acupuncture treatment an appropriate treatment for? How is this going to shift them into more of a balanced state, give them something that they are lacking, or temper something that they have too much of?
The Teixin is a gentle and effective tool for treating patients without inserting acupuncture needles. Using a Teixin causes no pain or discomfort, allowing practitioners to treat even the most sensitive of people. Using the Teixin invites practitioners to evolve senses and dormant capacities. Humans are capable of great subtlety, far greater than we often believe. Working with the Teixin compels us to confront many of our assumptions about what makes acupuncture effective. This exciting journey of self-discovery helps practitioners to refocus how they practice acupuncture. If you'd like to dig in deeper, check out episode 303, where I talk about all things Teixin with Dr. Bob Quinn. Blue Poppy carries a series of handcrafted Teixins created by a silversmith cooperative in San Pancho, Mexico. They also offer many videos on their YouTube channel, which provides basic instruction on how to use a Teixin and other non-insertive tools that they carry. Dr. Bob Quinn's best-selling book on how to effectively use the Teixin is also available. Visit www.bluepoppy.com for Teixins and other fine Japanese acupuncture tools. You bring up the constitutional aspect, and you bring up like who somebody is. And so it makes me think about like entrepreneurs, for example. Entrepreneurs, generally speaking, are not in it for the money. All right. People on Wall Street are in it for the money. Entrepreneurs, generally speaking, are in it because there's something they see in the world and they are not happy about it. And they want to make a change. They're very dissatisfied. They want to go disrupt or change something that they think needs changing. And it might not be so helpful to take away their dissatisfaction because it's their superpower. You might not want to take it away. You might want to supplement them in some way so they can keep burning that candle. But look, as human beings and what they came into with this life, they're not going to be happy if they can't kind of lean on that dissatisfaction and use it as a kind of fuel, ideally without burning themselves up. But sometimes, I mean, I look at human lives, we have this idea that balance and harmony is a beautiful thing and we should strive for it. I'm not so sure that's the case. Sometimes there's this really curious off-center wobble that is ours and uniquely ours. And the question is, how do we live with that in a way that makes us generative?
Absolutely. You know, and I think to some extent, it's like balance is always a temporary situation, right? We often think of balance as something that's very static, you know, and I think a good image or example of this within the field of Chinese medicine is thinking about the prenatal Bagua versus the postnatal Bagua, right? The prenatal Bagua is kind of this blueprint, this, you know, perfectly balanced image, this ideal perhaps that we strive for, but we don't live in that world. We live in the world of the postnatal Bagua, where, you know, instead of this perfectly balanced heaven and earth, north-south axis, you know, we have fire and water, which is more volatile in that north-south axis. And then everything else from, you could look at that and say, oh, this looks a little bit imbalanced compared to the prenatal Bagua, but it's that imbalance that keeps the world turning for good or for ill. But that is the world that we're in, right? We're in a world.
It is the world that we're in. And here's the other thing. It's what makes the world interesting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, this is getting into, you know, more of a sort of metaphysical level. But I think, yes, absolutely. Like, what are we here for? If everything was just in perfect harmony, perfect accord, you know, there's a sense in which, like, what would be the point of anything, really? I think it's the task of seeing that perfection within what appears to be imperfect. You know, I would say that's sort of where we find it in this world. Is it's hidden within. It's a matter of just seeing it.
Okay, so that makes me think the human realm, right? We have Earth, that's one thing. We have heaven, that's another. We have Earth, that's the 10,000 things, that's us. The muddle in the middle. You talked about the human level as being related to the Dreyin and Shaoyang. That's the human level. So help me think about how Dreyin Shaoyang helps us in living through this dynamically unbalanced and in some ways delightfully unbalanced, because life is exciting that way. How does Dreyin Shaoyang, the inner and the outer movements, help us with navigating heaven and earth?
That's a great question. You know, so if earth is our sort of physical satisfaction and dissatisfaction, the heaven realm, we could say, is our aesthetic satisfaction and dissatisfaction. It's our capacity to see beauty in the world, to respond to that. It's our capacity to experience and express love. It also governs satisfaction and dissatisfaction with relation to sexual matters. And I think this sort of makes sense when you think about the functioning of the Shaoyin and the Taiyang, right? If the Taiyin and Yangming is our postnatal metabolism, our kind of postnatal organs, the Shaoyin and the Taiyang are our prenatal organs, our prenatal, you know, so that governs essence, that governs our ability to reproduce, that also governs our connection to, you know, our ancestors as well. And so that's the sort of heavenly realm that relates to reproduction, that relates to love, and that relates to our ability to respond to beauty in the world. So then the human realm, the Dweiyin and Shaoyang, this governs our satisfaction and dissatisfaction with what is sometimes called the intellectual realm. You know, this is our ability to use reason in the world. And at first glance, that might seem a little not so directly connected to these organs. But if you look at how the Neijing assigns officials to each organ, the official assigned to the liver is the general, right? The person who's in charge of strategy and planning. And so I think this relates very much to the intellectual realm. It's our ability to kind of strategize and plan and see kind of what's coming down the road and come up with a response to it. And so the Dweiyin kind of governs our ability to feel satisfaction in that realm, to feel like we have a handle on things, to feel like we are respected, to feel like we have the ability to exercise power in the world, to exercise our mind in the world. The pericardium in some acupuncture is very closely related to our capacity to memorize, to hold information. It sort of stores information in the same way that we could say that the liver stores blood. And the Shaoyang governs dissatisfaction, or we could say the movement of those things out into the world. And so it's interesting because, of course, in some acupuncture, the Sanjiao and the liver are a pair. But there's also, I would say, a special relationship between the Sanjiao and the pericardium in Sam acupuncture, where the pericardium governs storage of knowledge, and the Sanjiao, you could say, governs forgetting knowledge in a way that is helpful, though, in the sense that you're no longer fixated on things of the past. So it's very common to do a Sanjiao tonification treatment on people who are dealing with PTSD or dealing with being kind of stuck in the past, reliving some traumatic experience or some traumatic memory, you know, dealing with that and kind of ruminating on that to the point that it's affecting them. Sanjiao, tonification of the Sanjiao channel, I would say, is often a good treatment for those types of people.
That's interesting. The Sanjiao and triple burner, of course, in our regular TCM have an internal-external relationship. So, you know, I'm often thinking about that as well. Even when I'm working, I'm going to air quotes here, Sa'am style. You know, sometimes I think about the other relationships as well. The thing about the pericardium and the triple burner that I find particularly interesting is both of these are organs that have a function, but they don't really have a form.
Yes.
And they're very much associated with a postnatal experience of being human.
Absolutely.
It's where the ministerial fire run.
Yes, yes. You know, and so they govern kind of our, like you said, the way that we navigate heaven and earth, the way we navigate this sort of postnatal realm and the prenatal realm and how those influences come together and are circulated within us and how we in turn circulate amongst other humans. You know, the pericardium, not as much, I would say, in the context of Sam acupuncture, but in the context of Chinese medicine, East Asian medicine as a whole, we can think about the pericardium as kind of governing intimacy, as the sort of wrapper around the heart being involved in who we let into our sphere and who we do not, you know? And so I think they very much, you know, from that perspective, it makes sense that these channels are considered human channels, or the channels that have to do with how we relate to other people, how we move through the world, you know, how the unfolding of our being is thwarted or enhanced by our relationships with other people.
Yeah. I get that. And again, we're talking the human circuit here. You're just talking intimacy and like connection with the heart. All right, so I want to go back to the heart for a second, because there's something that I've been toying with the heart urinary bladder connection, right? That's Sam pairing. It seems to, I just want to run this by you. Let me see if this holds water or not. Ooh, we're talking about urinary bladder and holding water. Okay, good. It seems to me the Taiyang level is the exterior of the body, right? It's the outside. So number one, it's protective. But anything that is at the outside, at the edge, that's working protectively, it's also a kind of a sense organ. So I've been thinking about this lately. Yes, of course, there's the idea of the pericardium. It lets things into the heart or not into the heart through the fire phase, because those are two fire organs. But the urinary bladder is a water organ. It's about the very exterior. And it makes me think that there is something about the urinary bladder that is also protective of the heart. It's the frontier. It's the wall it's like the wall around a country. It's the border of a country, for example. All right. Who can come in? Who cannot come in? And I see the urinary bladder, again, in sense of relationship. Maybe this is a more heavenly relationship. But, you know, of course, the heart is as close as you can get. You know, it's like the most inner thing of us. It's where the sovereign lives. I'm wondering about using the urinary bladder as a way of helping to protect the heart, and also how the small intestine may protect the heart, because it's both Taiyang, which means it's protecting the border, it's watching the perimeter. At the same time, the small intestine is a fire organ, so it also has communication. So I'm wondering about like using the small intestine as a way of being able to moderate what comes in and what doesn't come in. Certainly we see it in the digestive tract from Western medicine perspective. The small intestine decides what comes through that semi-permeable barrier and what doesn't in terms of nutrition. Is there also a way to think about the small intestine as being a kind of a heart protector through that Taiyang ability to have a boundary and that fire capacity to be connected?
Yes, I think that's a really interesting idea. And I really resonate with that very much. I think that makes a lot of sense from many different perspectives. You know, of course, you know, coming from like a sort of Shang Han Lun herbal perspective, Taiyang governs our interface really with the outer environment. In Sam, you see this concept as well, right? So when we say that the Shaoyin kind of governs aesthetic satisfaction, one way of understanding that is, it's when you are so enraptured with the beauty of something that you sort of lose yourself in it. You kind of become one with this thing that you're looking at, whether it's a work of art, whether it's a human being that you are in love with, and you sort of become one with them, either psychologically or physically in the act of lovemaking, but you become one with this thing that you are looking at. Whereas the Taiyang is dissatisfaction. So what that is, we could say, a sense of separation, right? It's a sense of breaking that sort of spell where you become enraptured. And some people, like I think in Toby Daly's teachings, he talks about how the heart is love, the bladder is fear. You know, that works. And this is, I would say, sort of a refining of that. When you feel love, you feel a sense of connection and oneness. And when you're afraid, you feel a sense of separation, and you want there to be separation between you and the object of fear. And so when we tonify the Taiyang channels, this is from a sort of Kim Hong Kyung approach to Sam acupuncture, you're sort of increasing your awareness of the external environment, and you're increasing your awareness of potential threats in the external environment. And so that can be helpful, right? If somebody is, you know, too absorbed into something, they maybe lose the broader sort of contextual awareness. They need a bucket of cold water thrown over them so that they can kind of wake up. There's a kind of, not sleepiness, but maybe we could say one-sided awareness that can develop if you are a heart or kidney excess. And in that case, tonifying the bladder or the small intestine could be a way of kind of shocking that person out of that state, helping them realize, you know, you can't, as wonderful as it is to be one with something, to be in this state of unity, you can't live your life there all the time, you know, or at the very least that has to be balanced with something else. And so,
you know what? I'm thinking about if you're walking through a rough part of town.
Exactly.
Right? We all have parts of town. It's like, they may have some beautiful architecture there, but it's a rough part of town, man. You want situational awareness. You want to know who's in front of you, who's to the side. You know, you want to be aware.
Yes.
Right? Because there's danger. And when there's danger, you want to have, sure, you could say fear, but what's the, for me, the question is this, what's the gift of fear? The gift of fear is, I'm going to be very careful. I'm using my situational awareness and I'm looking out for danger. Why? Because there's danger in this situation.
Exactly. It's like the hairs on the back of your neck, the Taiyang channel, stand up when that's activated. So yeah, with situational awareness, that's a perfect way to describe the quality that the urinary bladder and the small intestine kind of bring to somebody when you tonify those channels.
Wow. I'm thinking of a couple of patients right now that have gotten themselves into some pretty rough situations at times because they're open-hearted and loving. And they walk right into situations that they really get taken advantage of because they just don't have their eyes open to the manipulation that bad actors sometimes have. I'm wondering if a little extra urinary bladder for them will help them discern safe, not safe, because it's useful to know what's safe and not safe.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's about discernment. There's a kind of, cold, calculating quality that we need, you know, as part of the balance of different.
It's fortunate when you need it.
Exactly. It's fortunate when you need it. You know, and we can relate this too to the small intestines idea of separating the clear from the turbid, you know, seeing what is safe, what is not safe, seeing exactly. So I think that's a useful consideration perhaps for those patients. If somebody's too open-hearted, they need to be held in reserve a little bit, urinary bladder, potentially small intestine. Those are two things to consider.
You know, this really comes back to what you were saying earlier, Joshua, about yin and yang are not opposites. They're connected wholes.
Yes.
And it's, you know, it's so easy to have an opinion that, oh, this is good and that's bad and we should lean on this and not on that. Like, you should be open and loving. Well, of course you should. In situations where open and loving is safe and can take you forward. Like in a relationship, you want to be open and loving. Unless you're dealing with a narcissist or a psychopath, in which case you want some of that cold water boundary to be part of what you're doing, because otherwise you get taken advantage of or worse.
Exactly.
So there's a place for being cold-hearted.
There is a place for everything, you know. And so something else that Kim Hong Kyung emphasizes is that this sense of satisfaction, sense of dissatisfaction, it works as a rhythm, kind of moving through these channels, right? Because, you know, this is basic yin and yang, right? Nothing can be yin forever. Nothing can be yang forever. You know, the easiest way to see this is in the physical realm, because it's so immediate, right? You get hungry, so that's a sense of dissatisfaction that prompts you to go out and eat something. You eat, you feel a sense of satisfaction, But that doesn't last forever. You're going to get hungry again, and then you're going to have to go out and eat. Well, the same is true of these other areas of psycho-emotional rhythm. You have a sense of satisfaction and dissatisfaction when it comes to the expression of the heart, the expression of aesthetics or beauty or love. The same with the intellect as well. There's a rhythm, a rising and falling, an expansion and a contraction. And so, you know, this is really just, this is yin and yang operating at all the different levels of the human being in the same way that we see it operate in the cosmos, you know, through the movement of the seasons, through, you know, the cycle of light and dark. This is essentially just the breathing in and breathing out of the universe happening at different levels as a kind of fractal. And this is how it expresses itself through the human being.
I love it. And I love that you pointed out that satisfaction and dissatisfaction, it's a rhythm. It runs through all the channels. It runs through all the organs. It runs through our experience. It's not about grasping at one or the other. It's about the right thing at the right time in the right place. It's that rhythm. It's so easy to have an idea of what it is we want or what's the good thing, and then we fight against the bad thing. Maybe a little more helpful. I'm just thinking for myself to recognize where the rhythm is at this moment. Because look, fighting the tide is never going to help. But if you can learn to flow with the tide and like recognize the moments where change might be able to be promoted in some way, or maybe at least to keep the excess away.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of ways to think about that. But this idea of rhythm through the channels, that's beautiful. And the way that you just described it, I think this is one of the reasons I was drawn to Chinese medicine. Many of us were. I mean, there's a poetry that is phenomenally useful in a clinical way.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's really well put. Really well put. Poetry that can be clinically useful.
This Dr. Kim, are there any books of his or any materials that you would recommend if folks wanted to know more?
You know, unfortunately, so he has a number of books that are all in Korean. I don't believe any have been translated into English, unfortunately. So for me, I'm not fluent in Korean, so my access to his material is also somewhat limited. But if you look at teachers like H.B. Kim or like Evan Mahoney or the faculty of the former Samra University, his interpretation of Sam acupuncture is definitely the most influential in Korea. So any teacher who is from Korea or has studied directly with Korean teachers, they will have his theory kind of baked into their perspective on things. And so that's largely where I've learned it from, in somewhat second or third hand. Hopefully at some point his books might be translated into English. I think that would be really something, because he was a really prolific writer in Korea. He was something of a spokesperson for traditional medicine there. I know he was on different talk shows. I think he passed away in 2021, so pretty recently that he left us. But he was a little bit of a celebrity doctor for a while. And his approach to Sam acupuncture I find just to be really helpful, really complement the kind of foundation that I think a lot of us have from Toby Daly and his work.
Yeah, it's fun to find yourself on the cutting edge of something and noticing that there's a lot more and there's plenty of room for exploration. So we're in a good spot.
Yeah, we are. We're in such a interesting period of history in general, but I think especially for Chinese medicine, for East Asian medicine, because we have access to all of these different traditions from different cultures, different time periods. We can, kind of see them as they influence each other, see them in dialogue with each other, and we can kind of test out all of these different clinical approaches and see what works best for us and for our patients, in a way that I think, maybe has not existed before at any point in time. So it's an exciting time to be an acupuncturist, an herbalist, a practitioner of East Asian medicine.
For sure. It's a moment of synthesis.
Yeah.
Potential synthesis.
Yes, potential synthesis.
Yeah. All right. Well, Joshua, this has been a delight. Thank you so much for joining me again here. And I suspect we're going to have more conversations about this in the future.
My pleasure, Michael. Thank you so much for having me back.
One of the most powerful aspects of Sa'am acupuncture for me has been the way that the system pairs the organs together And the kind of energy and vitality that you can call forth from the body so that you can use the excess in one place to treat deficiencies in another. Or maybe another way to say it is it's possible to notice where the Zheng Qi is strong, where the system has plenty of vitality, and use that to treat where it's weak. The idea that we are not looking at separate aspects of yin and yang as being disconnected, but truly a counterbalanced continuum. This, for me, has been an incredible strength of this Aum system. Now, in this conversation today with Joshua, looking at the three circuits as we go through the Chinese clock, seeing it as heaven, earth, and person, you could all in some ways think of it as Jing Qi Shen. This is a very potent way that we have of looking at and thinking about the experience of being a human being. Combining this with the idea that the yin organs, they're about contentment, they're about satiation. The yang organs, the fu organs, these are about dissatisfaction. And looking at the rhythms of satiation and desire, how these ebb and how they flow, how these influence our physiological processes. You could think of it in terms of eating and digestion. There's a very simple one, breathing in, breathing out. These both are ways of looking at desire for something, satiation, and then once again, desire. With the breath, it's as simple as desire a breath in. You have that for long enough, you desire a breath out. There's a rhythm and a pattern. And to take this and apply it to the various organ systems, to take it and look at it just in terms of a human life, that there are moments where we are content and there's a time and a place for contentment. And there are times where we are discontent, and that's a motivation to evolve, to move forward, and to live life in a bigger way. I think these are potent ideas that for me came from this conversation. I'm, as always, curious to see how it plays out in clinic. Thanks as always for listening. If you liked this conversation, if you learned something new or found a moment of inspired insight, share the episode with your friends. If you want to support Geological, there's just one way to do that. It's by going to the website and becoming a member or leaving a one-time contribution today. Well, folks, that's it for today. Join us again next Tuesday for another conversation that connects up the voices of our community. Thanks as always for listening. If you liked this conversation, if you learned something new or found a moment of inspired insight, share the episode with your friends. If you want to support Geological, there's just one way to do that. It's by going to the website and becoming a member or leaving a one-time contribution today. Well, folks, that's it for today. Join us again next Tuesday for another conversation that connects up the voices of our community.